We're holding on page 22 in Eirvin, three lines from the bottom, middle of Os Yud Ches. We started talking about that the difference between Bnei Yehuda and Bnei Golil. The people in Yehuda were very precise with their speech, as the Gemara is going to give us an example now. And because of that, also they were very clear. Therefore, their Torah learning was preserved by them because they kept the right, they kept the exact wording, and that way they were able to remember it. The connection of that with this parak, I said it a little wrongly previously, actually. It was Rav Abba, actually, who asked, and he asked whether the Lashon and the Mishnah is supposed to be Ma'abrin or Ma'abrin with an Aleph or an Ayin, and what it says in the Gemara, not that it was a difference between Yehuda and Golo, but he asked among the people of Yehuda themselves, who, as we're saying over here, were known to be very accurate in their speech and in their transmission of the exact wording, and they told him, even among themselves, some of them learn it with an Aleph and some with an Ayin. Anyway, the point is that we were saying that the Bnei Yehuda were very careful with that kind of thing as opposed to the Bnei Golil. So the Gemara gives an example. Bnei Yehuda daiki lishna maihi. What's an example where we see that the people of Yehuda were very precise with their speech to make sure that there shouldn't be any ambiguity in it, that anything they say is clearly understood? You have the example, Dahu Bau Yehuda. There was a certain person from Yehuda, from the south of Eretz Yisrael, Da'omalahu, one time he says to people, Talis Yeshli Limker, I have a talis available for sale. Omrulay, my Dvan Talischa, so they ask him, what color is this talis? Omalahu, and he answers them, Kitrodin Alei Adam, like beets on the surface of the ground, meaning, in other words, it was green, but he couldn't say it, Marashar explains, he couldn't say the word yorik because in Gemara terminology, the word yorik means any of several different colors. Sometimes it means yellow, sometimes it means green, sometimes even there's a Tosfos in Sukkah that discusses that it may even be a shade of blue. So therefore, if he just said yorik, it wouldn't be precise enough. So therefore, he's describing it. Imagine like beet leaves growing on top of the ground, and then you have an idea of what color this talus is. So we see how careful he was to be able to describe it very precisely. The Pido explains there's also a deeper idea behind it. First of all, he says that one point is also within that itself. You can talk about, for example, those leaves are not always going to be when those leaves of the beets themselves are not always going to be exactly the same shade of green. Depends, for example, how fresh they are. Depends whether there's dust on them or whatever. So by saying Keturah Nale Adama, it was meant to suggest that it was meant to suggest the actual deep green color that they have when they're growing right there on the surface of the ground, and there's no dust on them or whatever. But he explains also on a deeper level that that they were asking him, a talus is usually the symbol of a Talmid Chacham in the Gemara, so therefore they're asking him, what level do you think a Talmid Chacham should be on? And he answers, Alei Adama, you have to be higher than the ground. You can't just be connected with the ground the way that Anam Aretz is. You have to be Alei Adama above it. Anyway, so that's Bnei Yehuda. Bnei Golil Deloy Daiki Lishna Maihi. Where is an example where the people of Golil were not so precise with their language? As the example, Dahu Bau Glila De'omalahu, there was once a person from the Golil who was going and saying, Amar Laman, Amar Laman. Who has Amar? And you couldn't tell what he meant by that word Amar. So they said to him, Glila Shoita, you foolish person from the Golil. The way you're saying it so indistinctly could mean any of a bunch of things. You could mean Chamar the Mirkav, you could mean that you want a donkey to be able to ride on, or Chamar the Mishti, or you could mean that you want wine to drink. Or you could mean Amar with an ayin, the Milbash, you could want Amar, which means wool, to make yourself clothing. Or Imar l'iskasa, or maybe you mean Imar with an aleph, but with a different nakuda, means that you want a sheep to shecht and to be to eat the meat of it. So you're not clarifying by saying Amar Laman, we can't tell what it is that you want. And Marshall gives a different girsa. He's saying the way we're saying it in the Gemara, he's saying it twice. But Marsha says that now you could say then, for example, maybe he meant Taka, he wants an Imer, a sheep that has an Amar wool, and therefore he's saying twice. He's saying who has a sheep that also has wool on it. But then how would the donkey and the wine fit in over here? So rather, Marsha says that he was asking actually for two different things, but in with both things, they weren't he wasn't being careful enough with his speech that anybody could tell what he wants. So you have all these four possibilities of what he means. And for that matter, when he says Laman, Marshall says also, it just means who has, but he should at least say more precisely what he wants it for, even if for fine, if he can't pronounce the word Hamar or Amar or whatever it is properly, at least if he had said what he wants it for, I want Amar to drink or I want Amar to wear or whatever, then they'd be able to figure out from context what he means. But like this, they're left guessing. And here's another example also of a person from the Golo who was very careless with her speech, and therefore what she said came out completely the opposite. There was a woman from the Golo who wanted to tell her friend, come and I'll give you some milk to drink. Or it could also be chelev. It could be chelba as in cholov, as in milk. It could also be chelev as in fat, in which case, of course, it would have to be the kind of chelev that's mutter, such as from a wild animal. Whatever. Anyway. But because she spoke very carelessly and indistinctly, therefore, Omra Lo, she ended up saying, Shlichti Toichlich Lovin. So first of all, Rashi says, she meant to say the word Shluvti, which means my friend. So like the rungs over there, the pieces that stick out of the crushim are joined, plugged in one to another. So Shluvti would mean my good friend. And instead she said Shluchti, which may not even mean anything, or Marsha brings from the Aruch that again she meant to say something like my neighbor, and instead she's saying a meaningless word. Or even the Aruch HaSholim points out over there, maybe even the word Shluchti is related to the word Sholach, as in throwing away, like as if she's saying you who deserve to be thrown away. Anyway, and when she's saying Toi De'uchlech Chelba, she slurred the words together, so it made it sound like Toichlech Lovi, a lion should eat you up. So here she's trying to be nice to her friend and offer her something to eat or drink, and instead she ended up saying something horrible to her. Another example, there was a woman also from the Galil who came in front of a dayan where she had a problem, she had a complaint against somebody in Dinim Mominis, and she wanted to tell him what's going on. Now, what had happened was that a large wooden board had been stolen from her. But she spoke very indistinctly and very sloppily, and therefore it came out like this. Omrele, she says, Mori Kiri, my master, my slave. Now, she meant to say the word Kiri, which is a Greek word and is also used in Aramaic to mean master. And instead she said Kiri with a Chof instead, or maybe she said it with a Kof, but still Kof and Kof are really supposed to have different sounds, as we know with the way that the Sfaradim pronounce them carefully, for example. So Kiri means a slave. So already she's starting off on the wrong foot. She continues, Tafla Habasli. I had a Tafla. She meant to say Tavla, meaning a board. And instead she said Tafla, which means a bean. Ugnavuch min, and they stole you from me. She meant to say something like, Gunvua mini or something like that, which would mean they stole it from me. And instead, because she's speaking so carelessly, she's saying that they stole you from me, which doesn't mean anything. And she continues, Uchudu habas, and now like this, she meant to say Uchudain habas. She meant to say this is the size that it was. Instead, Uchudu habas means now it was, which again doesn't really mean anything. In a parenthetical note over here, inserted into Rashi, the In Yaakov points out we do have now in the nusach of a get, you have the lashon chudu p'toris or shivakas, etc., where the husband says, "Now I'm divorcing and sending you away," etc. Based on this Gemara, we can understand what that word chudu means. It means a now. So now she's using that word when she meant to instead use the word chudain, means like this size. Anyway, if they were to hang you on it, your feet wouldn't reach the ground, which is a very chutzpahitic way of talking to the dayan, talking about having him hanged. So all told, in other words, she wasn't careful to express herself in a derech eretz tika way and in a clear way. So these are examples of the way the people in Galil talked. It could very well be, by the way, you find early on when Osa Ish himself was from the Galil and some of his early Talmidim came from there also. The Gemara may well be pointing out over here then that these kinds of people are very careless in their speech habits and who knows what else, and therefore they might fall for his kind of shtusim, whereas people who are more careful are not going to. Anyway. Now, on the flip side, we're saying that the Bnei Yehuda were careful with their language. So now the Gemara gives some examples of people who would use almost like a code language when they're talking in front of other people where they don't want them to understand. So they had a way of speaking what the Gemara calls Loshen Chochma, in a way using allusions and remuzim and whatnot in order to get their point across where other people wouldn't be able to understand. So one example, I'm Hosa Debei Rebbe, the maidservants in Rebbe's household, ki have a mishtayan or mishtaya b'loshen chachma. When they would speak b'loshen chachma, the loshen that we have where the mishtayan is plural, so it would mean that all the maidservants learned this secret language, this language of chachma, and spoke that way. And in that case, then Ben Yehoyada explains that when they're addressing themselves to, they're speaking to the head Amma, the head maidservant, and asking her what to do, as we're going to go on to say. According to the Girsa in square brackets, Mishtoya, it would mean that there's only the one head maidservant who knows this Lashon Chachma, and then the Pashtus, she's asking Rebbe what to do. Anyway, so when she was using Balashon Chachma, Amrin or Omra Chachm, so they or she would say as follows. Now you had many Talmidim of Rebbe would eat by his table. And as we know from all over Shas, they used to drink lots of wine with the meal. So eventually you'd use up a whole barrel of wine. So now the question is, when the barrel is getting used up, should we tell the Talmidim it's time to bench and go home, or is it time to open another barrel and we'll continue? So Omrin or Omra Hochi, so they, the maidservants, would ask the head one or the head maidservant herself would ask Rebbe, or she would say, Olas Nokfas Bakad. The ladle, olas means like a ladle that you use to get wine out of the barrel. Nokfas is banging bakad against the barrel. Yidu nishraya l'kinehan. Should the eagles fly home to their nests? In other words, it's time to say the fibrengen's over. It's time to send everybody home because the wine's been used up. Or should we say yet or yedi basar chabatamina? Should we maybe take off basar? Can have two different meanings. It can mean after. It can also mean a piece of. Like you have by the Brisbane Absalom, by Vater Oisim Atalbach, he split them in half. And Marsha says that also there's a girsa that not basar but rather keser, meaning a crown, because the stock or a barrel is like a crown on top of it. Anyway, yedi bosar or keser chavatamina, should we remove after another fellow barrel or piece of another, or the piece of the next barrel or the crown of the next barrel, mina from it? In other words, should we open another bottle? Should we open another barrel and continue the fabren? So, kehavan nichalo delezlo. And so when she decided that it was time for them to go, omer lohan yudun nishnai l'kinehon, then she would tell them it's time for the eagles to fly home. And when she wanted them to stay sitting, have Amrullah, then she would tell them, yes, take off after or a piece of or the crown of its chaber from it. And she would continue, Visiskefe Olas Bakad, and the ladle should now float in the barrel, Ki'ilfa de Azla Biyama, like a ship that's sailing in the sea. So this was Loshen Chochma. In other words, this way other people who are around the house wouldn't know what she's getting at or what Rebbe is getting at, but the people who needed to know would understand what's going on. Tosfos, by the way, points out an interesting thing in this connection. We learned in Shabbos, we have the story of Yosef Moiko Shabbos, and there's another Gemara similar where it mentions over there that when he sold the diamond that he found in the fish, it says over there in the Gemara, he sold it for 13 elisa of gold of gold dinar. And there's also a Gemara in Baba Basra that uses the same expression. Now, on the face of it, elisa means attics. So it means 13 attics full of gold coins, which sounds like an enormous guzma. How many gold coins are there out there? So Tosfa says, based on this Gemara, the word Elisa in those cases may mean ladlefuls. So in that case, it's not quite so much a guzma, it could mean literally. Another example, Rabbi Yossi Ba'astion, ki have a mishtoi b'loshen chachma. When Rabbi Yossi Ba'astion was speaking in Loshen Chachma, and again, he wanted to say he wanted to tell the people in his house what he wants to eat, but he doesn't want everybody to know what he's saying. So he wants beets with mustard. So he would say, Asuli Shur Mishpat, make for me an ox of judgment, Betur Miskein, on a poor mountain. So the shur mishpat stands for the word trodin, which means beats, because trodin breaks down into tur, which means an ox in Aramaic, and din, which is a synonym for mishpat. And tur miskein comes out to another word, tur, is the Aramaic word for a mountain, which in Hebrew is har, and har and char are very similar. Often we darsh and hay and ches to be very similar. And miskein is another word for dal, which means poor. So in effect, he's asking for beets with mustard, but like this in a way where other people around, besides the people who need to know, won't understand what he's getting at. There is a vart, aside from the Gemara's giving this as an example of the Chochmah, of the Chochamim, how they knew to be able to give over important messages in hidden language, there are also deeper ideas in this. This particular one, there's a vart from Rabbi Yitzchak Berditchever, where he says the Tur Miskein represents, there's a Gemara in Sukkah that tells us that La'osid Lovei, Hashem is going to take the Yetzirah and shecht it in front of everybody, and then the Tzaddikim and the Rishoyim are both going to cry. The Tzaddikim are going to see it as a giant mountain, and they're going to say, how are we ever able to overcome that giant mountain? And the Rishoyim are going to see it as a tiny little hair, and they're saying, how could we not overcome that tiny little hair? The Yetzer Toiv, on the other hand, is a pasuk in Kehelas that calls him Yelad Miskein B'chacham, a poor but smart child. And unfortunately, as Shlomo says in the Pesukim, people don't always listen to the Yelad Miskein B'chacham. They prefer to listen to the Melech Zokin Uksil. So therefore, this true miskein that Rabbi Yossi Bar Asian is mentioning over you, he says, was meant also as a limud schus for the Jewish people. The fact that they don't overcome the tur, the mountain of the Yetzer Hara, is because, after all, the Yetzer Toiv is a miskein, and people don't always think to pay attention to it. Anyway, so that was part of the Lashon Chochma, is to not only ask for what he should have for dinner, but also to be melamed schus on the Jewish people. And the kad have a shol bo shpiza. Also, when Rabbi Yossi Bar Asian was asking about a particular inn, so he would want to know whether to stay in it or not, or how things are over there. Omar Hochi, again, instead of asking outright, he would ask again in Loshen Chochma, Gvar Pum Dein Chai Mazu Toiva Yesh. So Rashi explains like this: Gvar means a man, and another word, that's the Aramaic word for man, and the Hebrew, the word for it is ish, which is similar to the part of the word ush, from the word ushpiza, ushpiza. Pum is similar to the word p, so therefore that stands for the second syllable. Dain is the Aramaic word for this, which in Hebrew is zeh, so that gives you the third syllable. Chai is not part of the word. It means, is he alive? So Gvar Pum Dein can be reanalyzed as Ush Pi Za. Chai, is he alive? Mazu Toiva Yesh, how is he faring? What kind of good does he have? And Marsha brings a different explanation from the Oruch, and also Rabbi Hananel in the Gemara over here says, very similar, that the Chai is part of the word as well, because he's asking about Ush Pizich Na, which actually has a double meaning. It can mean the inn itself. It can also mean the wife of the innkeeper. Now, it's not derech eretz for a man to ask openly about the health and welfare of somebody else's wife, so therefore he would disguise it with Lashon Chochma. According to that, the chai, now one meaning of chai, besides that it means alive, also means raw. So, and in Lashon Kodesh, the word for that is na, like al tochlu mena na by the Korban Pesach. Therefore, Gvar Pum Dein Chai comes out to Ush Bezich Na, and therefore the question is Mazu Tova Yesh. Well, how what good do they have? Like what kind of goodness do they have? What kind of how are they feeling? So that would be the Lashon Chochma to ask about it. Other Mephoshim point out that also there's the point, besides, like Maharsha said, that it means that he's asking about the wife of the innkeeper, and it's not derech eretz to ask openly. There was also the point Gemara mentions in some other places. That a person should not openly go and say, you know, they treated me so well in this inn, because then in this lodging place, because then other people are going to try to come and take advantage of the guy and benefit from his achnas aserich and then eat him out of house and home. So therefore, for that reason also, he doesn't want to ask openly how the guy is doing, so he would disguise it b'loshen chochma. Another example, Rabbi Bohu ki avi mishtoi b'loshen chochma, when Rabbi Bohu was speaking in loshen chochma, Hava Omar Hochi, he would say as follows: Atrigu lepechomin, make the coals like esroidim, which means make them burn brightly so that they're yellow and red, like the color of an esrog. Arkiu lazahovin, spread out the zahovim, which means the golden coals. In other words, once they're burning, then spread them out so the heat of them is more spread out. Va'asuli shnei magide ba'alata, and make for me two things that call that inform in the darkness, which means two roosters. He wants them to prepare for him to cook on the coals. Two roosters, where a rooster is magid ba'alata, because when it's night and dark outside, they crow and they tell you the morning is coming. Ikadamri, or another version, he said, the yastuli bahen shnei magide ba'alata, they should make for me with them two magide ba'alata. So either way, in other words, he's asking that he wants them to prepare him two chickens for dinner and to prepare the coals for it. Marsha refers to the Aruch that gives a bit of a different explanation. He understands atrigu, not maloshen esrig, but rather coming from another Aramaic word that means to break up. So it means break up the coals and spread them out in order that we get the maximum amount of heat out of them. And again, there are deeper ideas in this. There's something that Ben Yehoyada on this Gemara talks about, that among others, the word atrigu refers to, you have the middle four letters of it are taryag, as in the taryag mitzvahs, and the aleph and the vav before it equals seven, representing the seven mitzvahs d'rabbanan. So therefore, he's also telling them that we have to be careful. Even the pechamin, even the people who are black like coal and very far away from Torah and mitzvahs, we have to bring them to become burning coals and to become glowing like gold. And then those will be my gidei ba'alata. That will be my limud schus. Those will be my melamdis schus lamaila after 120. That I can say that I worked to bring back Jews to Torah and mitzvahs. And there are a number of other similar explanations in somewhat similar veins from other achronim. Another example of Lashon Chochma, this one being more kind of a almost like plays on words, like a pun. I mean, some of the other ones were also, but anyway. Omru le rabbonim le rabbohu, hatzfinenu heichan rabbi loit sofum. Hatzfinenu, Rashi says, Meloshin sefiya halichas besa, which means she looks out for. So help us look out for, help us know, where is rabbi loit hidden? So Hatzfinenu and Safun is sort of a play on words. They didn't know. Rabbi Loya disappeared, and they didn't know where he was. So they're asking Rabbi Bohu to inform them where he is. Amalahu said, Rabbi Bohu again answers them with a play on words. Olatz benara aharoinis. He has been rejoicing with a young lady aharoinis from the family of Aaron. Achroinis, the later one. Ironis. A lively one, vihin iratu, and she kept him awake. So amri lo isha v'amri lo masechta. Some say that Rabbi Bohu means that Rabbi Loi had gotten remarried. So then he got remarried with a girl, who he had gotten remarried to a girl who was a bas koyin, therefore she's a aharoinis from the family of Aaron. Achroinis, she's the latest one in the sense Rashi says that his first wife had passed away and now he remarried. Or Marsha says you don't even really need that. I mean, this is before Chaim Yerub and Gershom. A person could have two wives, so conceivably it could mean that he married a second wife in addition to his first one. Although one of the Achroinim, I think might be Ben Yehoyada, I don't remember, counters that and says, after all, the second wife is usually subject to the first one. It wouldn't be right that a Bas Koyan should be subject to anybody else. So therefore, that justifies more Rashi's point that his first wife had passed away. Anyway, Ironis, she's a lively girl. Balas Chen Bacharifa, Rashi says. She's very great, very graceful and very short. Marsha says another point, Ironis can also mean a girl from a village as opposed to from a big city where the people from the villages are usually stronger and smarter and whatever. Anyway, Vahin Iratu, and she kept him up. So therefore, that's why he's not in the Beis Medrash today. Others say that Rabbi Bohu is telling them that Rabbi Loi was learning a Masechta, a new Masechta of Shas. According to that, it's Aharonis. It's something that has to do with the Avoda of Bnei Aaron, which means Rashi says from Seder Kodshim. Achronis, it's the latest one that he learned. He finished a previous Masechta and started this one. Ironis, it's very lively. It's something very deep and very interesting. Vihiniratu, and it kept him up all night for Tifim Zichanit. Marsha says a little differently, that Aharonis wouldn't mean a Masechta from Seder Kodshim. He says it would mean a Masechta from Seder Taharas. Taharas, to a certain extent, apply to the whole Jewish people, but of course they apply more to the Kohenim. They have to be more careful on Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, so therefore those can be called Aharonis, and it can be called Achronis, not just like Rashi says, it's the latest one that he just started learning, but also because Seder Taharis is the last Masechta of Shas. And it is Ironis. It's very, very lively because the Masechtas of Seder Taharis are very difficult to understand, and it takes a lot of work to understand them. And Vihinirachtu, and therefore that kept him up all night. So either way, Rabbi Bohu is telling them with a play on words that why Rabbi Loi is not in the Bais Medrash today. Another time, Omer Leila Rabbi Loi. Another time, they asked Rabbi Loi in turn, Hatzfinenu Heichan Rabbi Bohu something. Show us where Rabbi Bohu is hiding himself. Amalahu, he answers them, Nisya Etzva Machtir. He took advice from the Machtir, which means the one who crowns, which Rashi says refers to the Nasi, because the Nasi is the one who gives permission to give smicha, and we mean the original kind of smicha that they had back then, the kind that goes ish mipi ish back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Originally, the Rambam describes in Hilchos Sanhedrin, originally any chacham who had smicha could decide on his own to give smicha, but ever since the time of, I think it says from the time of Rav Gamliel or Shimon Gamliel, I don't remember exactly, where he says that the Chachamim decided that only that you need the permission of the Nasi before you can give anybody smicha. Therefore, the Nasi can be called in a poetic way, the Machter, the one who crowns the Chachamim. So Rabbi Bohu took advice from the Machter, from the Nasi, the Hingiv, and he went south, Meloshen Negev, the Mephibosheth down to Mephibosheth, where Mephibosheth is, where he was back in his times, he was a Rebbe of David HaMelech, so therefore he was an enormous Talmud Chacham. So Mephibosheth is used as a nickname for the great Talmud Chachamim who live in other parts of Eretz Yisrael. So in this case, in other words, Rabbi Bohu, on advice from the Nasi, traveled to the south of Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah with the great Talmud Chachamim who live in the south of Eretz Yisrael there. And the rest of us are up in the north, so therefore that's why you don't know where he is right now, because he went south. But again, he's using this poetic way of saying it rather than saying straight out. Continues the Gemara on this topic of people being careful with their wording and with the way they act. Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, mi yomei l'nitzchani odem ala isha itinok bitinokis. Nobody in all my life ever got the better of me in an argument except for a woman, a boy, and a girl, as he's going to tell the stories over here now. And the point is that we find throughout Shas, Rabbi Yeshua was tremendously very sharp. He was a tremendous chacham. We have many times he's arguing with minim and even with emperors and besting them in arguments. And still he's saying that nevertheless, there was one time when a woman and another time when a boy and another time a girl got the better of me in an argument. So Isha Maihi, what was the story with the woman? He says, "Pam achas nisarachti etzel achsanya achas." One time, I was staying by a certain inn, and the lady of the house, the balas habayis, va'ostali poilin, she made for me beans to eat. Pam rishona saadti v'leshiyarti klum. The first time she served it, I ate the whole thing and I didn't leave anything over. Shnia saadti v'leshiyarti klum. Second time, the same thing. Shlishis, the third time she served me the same thing, hikichatu b'melach. She burnt it with salt. In other words, she oversalted it. Kivet shata'amti, mashachti yodah hemenu. I tasted it, and I pulled back from it because it's too salty to eat. Omrili Rebbe, mifnei ma mashachti yodah hemenu. So she asked me, why you're not eating? Amarti l'kvar sa'at. So he didn't want to tell her flat out, you oversalted the food. That wouldn't be derech eretzit. So he makes an excuse. Kvar sa'adti mi ba'odiyo. I already ate before. I'm not so hungry right now. Omrali, but she sees that obviously I didn't get the hint. Omrali, she says, Rebbe, Shemala, he nachta peya barishona. Maybe the problem is that you didn't leave peya over the first two times I served you. We don't mean peya as in what you leave over from the corner of the field. It's the expression is borrowed from that, because just like there, you leave over part of the harvest for the poor people. Here, the idea is it was considered derech eretz dik. You don't eat everything that's served to you. You leave a little bit of it over, and that is given to the waiter or to the cook who prepared the food. So in this case, there was an inn. There was a waiter over there serving Rabbi Yeshua, and he should have left over some of the food for that waiter to eat. So she says to him, didn't the Chachamim say, Ein Meshayrin Peya Be'ilfas? You don't have to leave over Peya for that purpose in the pot. When the waiter is pouring from the pot into your plate, he doesn't leave over anything for himself. Avam Shirin Peya Bakara. But you're supposed, you, the guest, are supposed to leave over some in the plate, and afterwards the waiter will eat that. So now she got the better of him that he hadn't realized that point. And the reason why Marisha says, so why did she choose to convey that to him by oversalting the food? She was hinting, you know what, the reason why you want to make sure that the waiter should have something to eat, besides the fact that he's serving the food, it's only right to, as Gemara tells us in Ksubas, but also this way he won't ruin the food, because he'll know he himself is going to be getting some of it, so that'll give him an incentive to prepare it properly. So now she oversalted the food, making it inedible, to hint to him that he had not done that for the waiter. Now, why Taka didn't Rabbi Yeshua do that? Marsha said it's only Hilchos Derech Eretz, and it may even be that because of that he wasn't familiar with it. But nevertheless, she apparently knew of that, and she told him off in this delicate way. So that's what he's saying, that one time that in this case she got the better of him in the argument. Kinoikas Maihi, what was an example with a girl? Pamachas in the Halach Baderech Basada. He says one time I was walking on a path through a field. So there was a road going through the field. I'm walking on this road. A girl says to me, Rebbe Lav Sodehu, isn't this a field? What are you doing walking through it? I said, what's the problem? Aren't I walking on a trodden down path, meaning a beaten path that's already in use for a long time? She says to him, it's robbers like you who beat that path. In other words, he should have realized, she's telling Rabbi Yeshua, you should have realized the fact is it goes right through a field that's planted, and not necessarily the fact that people have been using it as a shortcut does not mean they ever had permission from the owner of the field to do that. Marsha, by the way, points out, now you do have a halacha called Meitzer Shech Ziku Bei Rabim also a Kalkula. When you have a border or road or whatever that the Rabim have gotten a chazaka on, then the owner of the field is not allowed to ruin it, for example, by planting it. But that's where, to begin with, they had permission to walk on it. So you have a case, for example, the Gemara talks about, let's say originally the road ran through the middle of the field, and he decides, you know what, I don't want that. I don't want that. I want it to be by the side of the field. So he's not allowed to take back that place in the middle because the mates are Sheikh Zikr Rabin. But here she's saying people never got permission in the first place to take a shortcut through the field. So this is an example. He's saying that the Tinoikas got the better of him. The third one, Tinoik Maihi. What's the example with the Tinoik? One time Rabbi Yeshua says, I'm walking on the road. I saw a boy sitting by crossroads. I asked him, my son, which road should I take to get to the city? So instead of answering it directly, he says, Zu arucho, k'tzara v'zu k'tzara v'arucho. The one road is long but short, and the other one is short but long. So I figured, okay, sort of arucha, okay, it sounds like the better one. It's shorter. So who cares that it's longer? Halachti, but sort of arucha. So I went on the short one, which he said is short but long. But then I'm getting close to the city. It's surrounded by gardens and orchards, and there's no way to get through. I turned around back to the crossroads. The boy is still sitting over there. I says to him, Bni, didn't you tell me it's short? But I told you it's short but long. In other words, it's short if you want to get to the fields and vineyards and whatnot. It's not so short if you want to get into the city. So Rabbi Yeshua wasn't upset. In fact, just the opposite. In the shakt of our Rosh, I kissed him on the head. And I said to him, how happy are you, Yisrael, that all of you are chachamim, from your greater ones to your lesser ones, even your children are so smart that they understand how to say such a way, how they understand to say something like that. And Marsha explains, in other words, that Rabbi Yeshua understood that tfois loshin rishin, it means you go according to the first loshin. It means, in other words, it'll be shorter in the sense that you can actually get to your destination that way. It's arucha, but it's a longer road to get there, as opposed to, you figured, the other one, arucha uktzara, means it's going to be in the end long, that you're not going to actually reach the city, even though it's going to be shorter in walking. And now the boy is explaining to him the other way around, tfois loshin achra, and you have to look at the second loshin, and therefore then you'll realize it properly. So Rabbi Yeshua complimented him on how he expressed himself like that. We have, by the way, in the Shai Blot of Tanya, when the Alter Rebbe says that he's explaining b'derech arucho k'tzara b'ez Hashem, so you have the explanation from the Rebbeim that it means in Tanya also there's a derech k'tzara v'arucha and a derech arucho k'tzara. You have the derech arucho k'tzara to come to avas Hashem and yiras Hashem, which is through his boninus. It's arucha. It takes a long time to develop that, but k'tzara, once you're there, then once you're on that path, then you're pretty much there. Even though it takes a while to reach that. And then you have the Derech Tzara, which is to base yourself on the Avam Soteres, and that's, even though it seems shorter, it seems like a shortcut, but it ends up being a much longer road to getting there. Anyway, another example with walking, with going to a city, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Habakkuk Ozel Be'urcha, Rabbi Yossi Aglili was one time traveling on the road, Ashkecha LeBruria, and he met up with Bruria, the famous Bruria, the wife of Rabbi Meir, who herself was a big Talmid Aschacham. He asks her, which road should I take to get to the city of Lud? She says to him, Glili Shoita, you foolish person from the Galil. And the Chidah says that it's also meant a little bit of a limud schus. We said before, the people from the Galil weren't so careful in how they expressed themselves. So she's saying, you're from the Galil, you don't know how to express yourself so clearly, but you need to learn. Didn't the Chacham say, don't speak too much with women? You should have just asked which one to Lud, which would be a shorter way of saying. And that way you're not being my besichei meisha. I've seen also a vote that she was criticizing him for the fact, why is he saying be'ezer derech neilech lalud, as in the word neilech means me and you together, and that's not derech eretzik, that he should be walking with a woman who's not his wife. So therefore, she's also calling him out on that you shouldn't use the word neilech. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Tesvav Tammuz. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that Hashem in the future is going to set up for us Jewish people another David who will rule over us. As it says in the Pasuk, "Ba'avdu as Hashem alekeim v'es David malka mashaokim lahem." So it doesn't say Hakim, that Hashem did set up David, which would imply that David will come back in Tchias Emesim, but Okim, that I will set up, meaning that David will be ruling over us in the future. So then the Gemara asks, what about that it says, but David abdi nosi lahem la'olam, it says that David will be the nosi, implying not the melech. And so the Gemara answers, like you have Kesar, or Paugi Kesar, means like the way you have an emperor and a half emperor, a semi-emperor, a vice emperor, or whatever, as it actually translates, it means a melech and a mishnah melech. So it means, in other words, there's not going to be two leaders. Mashiach himself will be both the Kesar and the Paugi Kesar, and then we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, and explain, the Rebbe will give the explanation why Dafka, the Gemara, uses the word Kesar for that instead of melech or some such term like that. Hilchas Nedarim Mushvois, continuing on. If a person was noyig some chumrah in something which is technically mutter, but he did it as a siyog, or he did it as a matter of prishus to separate himself from aveira or whatever. For example, you have people who have the minhag to fast during yemei slichas, or some people have the minhag not to eat meat or drink wine the entire 3 weeks. Even a person did that only one time, but he intended to do that forever, or if he did it three times, even if he didn't intend to do it forever and he didn't say bli neder, then he needs hataras nedarim. So then when he goes to the Beis Din, he starts with charota. He starts by saying that I'm mischaret v'sholem or mischaret ani, like we say in Rosh Hashanah, that he's mischaret, that he did that l'shem neder. So therefore, better that he should be saying to begin with that he's not taking it on in a neder, and also say that he's only planning to do it this time or particular times rather than the olam, and that'll save himself from that kind of issue.